What's up, y'all, and welcome back to Found Bites, a game review series. My name is Brian, and I'll be your host. If you don't know about us, we're all about finding and testing out small, high-quality video games. This is a podcast that aims to respect your time and money as a gamer and a consumer by sifting through storefronts and sales to find those gems that may be worth your precious resources. But enough about the show. Let's get into our next game. Dismantle is the game for this week's episode. Dismantle is a dystopian open-world crafting action RPG released in 2021 and developed and published by 10 Tons Limited. The game is available on PC, Xbox One, Series X and S, PS4, PS5, Switch, and there's a couple mobile versions, so you can pretty much play this wherever you like. So what really drew me in and got its teeth in me is this is pretty much an open world kind of break and craft. The setup and the setting and all of that is very like State of Decay meets like Dead Island and a little bit of Fallout. It's very just go, like you jump in, it's pick up and play. You don't really need a lot of context and you just start smashing stuff and really get into it. And so a lot of crafting, a lot of upgrading, leveling up. There is definitely a role-playing system in here where it's kind of cycle-wise or like circular where you have to craft something to get this upgrade. And then once you get that upgrade, it allows you to level up and craft this thing and that thing. So you're going to be in this cycle. It's very Merchant of Skies as well as a lot of Stardew Valley, I feel. But also the idea of just breaking things, I guess, is very Just Cause. I know there's a bunch of the games in that series. I haven't played any of them, but I know of it. So it's very like you can break anything. So there's a lot of possibilities of what you can do. But it's a lot of making weapons, making tools, making armor, equipping different things. Very open and endless. And I think what's nice is it's also very play with your own priorities because there is like a quest-based system where you can just go out and do a bunch of different things whenever you come across them. The game was released with an MSRP of $19.99. I got it for $7 on PS5 on sale. I put in a little more than 10 hours, closer to 15. How Long to Beat is saying that getting through the main story is about 30 hours, but you could spend a lot of time and be a completionist, and that could double it. I mean, I think it says over 70, maybe 75 hours. If you really want to sink some time into this, you definitely can. And the game was developed by 10 Tons Limited, we talked about. This is a small team, I think from Finland, and I've seen some games on their website. I don't know if it's developed or published, but some of these games I've heard of, like a lot of the Tesla games, like Tesla versus Lovecraft. Neon Chrome is a game on there. I think I've seen, I don't know, I might have actually bought that. A lot of continued content for this game. There's a lot of extra content. I don't know if it's paid. There's a menu on the main screen that says, like, oh, do this one or that one, or there's something with like animals or something like that. I don't know. But they definitely are supporting this game a lot, so extra content is nice to see. And I didn't really hear about this game. I saw it on sale on PSN. The review scores on PSN look like a solid number. It seemed like a simple game. So $7, I decided to dive in. All right, let's talk gameplay for Dismantle, and let's get into the basics. So it's kind of a top-down camera-ish. You can move it around. It's very similar to Baldur's Gate 3. Like, you can kind of zoom in a little bit, kind of zoom out, but you can move it around. You can invert the X-axis. Definitely something that's irksome to me, but you couldn't do that in Baldur's Gate 3 either. And so I was okay with it because it's kind of like a fixed... Weirdly, it's like higher up and like it's not like a full third person action or anything like that. So there is minimal range. So I was okay with not inverting the X-axis. It feels more like an isometric view, kind of far away, but you can slightly move it around when you need to. So it didn't really irk me that much. So you can walk around with your character and you can run. There's a button that you hold to run and there's no stamina meter. You can run forever. So that's really nice. There's a dodge roll that you can do with your character, and then there's a swing of your melee weapon or your tool, whichever you have equipped. If it's a tool and you can swing it, it'll swing, but if it has a specific use, you'll just do that use. Like if you have the shovel, it'll dig, but if you have the crowbar, it's just swinging it. And whenever you have a lock on to an enemy, which will happen automatically, you can hold it to do like a power swing. I think that's only for the ones that can actually damage enemies, so weapons. And something that you'll get used to is that there is kind of a timing refresh for being able to do consecutive swipes, because you are going to go into an enemy, swipe them back up. So you need to know the timing of like how quickly you can swing again, and you'll get used to it pretty quickly. And you'll be able to cycle through any weapons or tools that you have equipped with the D-pad. I think it's left on the D-pad, but it's all going to be the same button for swinging a melee or using the tool. So you'll be cycling through weapons and tools. And then there's a button for using an item. And this is similar to cycling through with the weapons and tools. They'll be like the consumable item. It's not necessarily consumed. It's more like having charges. And these will be things that are like throwables or things you use to heal yourself. So you can cycle through and then use them. And then you'll be interacting. So things will pop up whenever you're close to something. It could be just to open a door, to search something where you have to hold it. It could be access a terminal, access a camp, the supply box at camp. So all those things will pop up. And as you're walking around, you'll see the things you can interact kind of slowly pop up when it's in the camera view, especially like opening doors. So you'll know like, hey, I can go over there and open that door. So let's talk progression in the game. So this is a pretty simple game, but it is an open world, quote unquote. It's kind of like this very large sandbox and you're just dropped right in from the beginning. And so it's kind of this free roam. At times it'll be gated, whether it's because like physically you can't get past certain things, or whether it's because you need a certain level of experience to access certain things. So this will come up at times, but for the most part, you're really just allowed to walk around. The game is quest-based, so you will have a main quest, which is basically to get off the island, to get out of here. But of course, as you go to try and do it, the laundry list of tasks to do before then is just going to start growing and growing. But then you'll also find a lot of side quests, and these are just simple things, like maybe a challenge at a certain area, or it could be like go fix this thing or open this thing, and it might take you in sort of a roundabout thing. But you don't have to do the side quests. They definitely will help you. A lot of the things that you're going to need to do are going to be rooted in crafting things or collecting certain things, or just arrive at that location. So definitely the main quests are going to be like, get to this location. And then when you get there, it's like, oh, we have to craft this, you know, flim-flam thing to make this work. So you're definitely going to see a lot of that. And as you do things, you will level up, you'll unlock things to craft, you'll unlock different quests. And even as you're walking around to different locations, there might be quests in specific locations with like an exclamation point that pops up. Or if there's a question mark, it's like a hint on what to do here. A lot of those things are very interactive, and just like as you come across them, it could add side quests, it could add ways to gain experience or find things. And since you are going to be crafting a lot, gathering materials and resources is going to be a major thing that you're doing in this game. And how you're going to do it is, for the most part, just hitting and breaking things. And you can pretty much break everything in this game. And the first tool slash weapon that you get is going to be the crowbar. And that's going to allow you to pretty much hit and break all of your minor things that you'll come across in the beginning of the game. Now, you will get other tools or weapons that can also do things. Not all of them are going to be able to break everything because of the nature of what the tool or what the weapon is. Not all of them are also going to be able to hurt enemies. So some of the tools can hurt enemies. Like the shovel is really only going to be for digging, but like the crowbar is really going to be used for both things. So you'll come across a lot of different things that you use that'll be better in different scenarios, and you'll kind of gauge that as you get access to them. Whenever you hit something with the crowbar or something else that it can damage it, a hit meter is going to pop up for that object. So every object is going to have that hit meter, and it'll stay there until you completely hit it down and then it breaks apart. But what you'll find pretty early on is that anytime you swing, you can only hit one object, at least with the crowbar. It might be kind of a trial and error thing to make sure that your character's aiming at the thing that you're trying to hit. But again, with the pace of doing consecutive swings, you'll get into a rhythm pretty early on of like, oh, okay, with my crowbar at this level, I'll have to hit it four times and then it'll break apart and then the resources will pop up. So the different things that you'll be able to hit again, pretty much anything is fair game, but early on, it's going to be any kind of grass or vines. There's going to be vines like on walls for buildings. They'll maybe be on fences. There'll be like plants that are in the grass. So like as you're walking through some of the grass, you might not be able to pass through something. If you hit it, you'll recognize that you can break it. Different crates, different poles. I mean, it could be like street signs, furniture. Once you start to get into houses, fences you can break down. And if there's ever an instance where you can't break something, it'll say like you can't break it with this tool, or this tool needs to do more damage in order for you to break this thing. So right off the bat, you're not going to be able to like break down a wall of a house or something like that. You'll recognize early on, like, okay, I have to start small with the things that I can break, and then eventually you'll be able to break bigger things. But everything in the game can get broken. So eventually you will be able to break walls, whether it's with your weapons or with exploding certain things. You'll be able to break cars, etc., etc. And so when you deplete the meter of any particular object, it'll drop a particular resource. And so some of the early things you'll get, things will make scrap metal, scrap wood, ceramic, plastic, scrap fabric. And then as you start to upgrade things and be able to break bigger things, you'll get better resources. So you'll get fabric, you'll get iron, all kinds of things. So there's definitely tiers of resources that you'll find out that you're going to be able to get. And not everything is retrieved from just breaking things. You'll be going out into the wilderness, and sometimes you'll see a prompt pop up for searching something. And this could be just to forage things. So sometimes bins will have things in them and you can search them. Like a mailbox might have something in it that you can just search and it'll pop out. Or like foliage or like berries or mushrooms or eggs or different things like that. And what's interesting about getting resources, whether through breaking things or foraging, each of these instances only exist once. So like you can go and break a piece of fence or break a box or break a chair. That thing will only exist once. It won't get refreshed. It's not that you should be like concerned about it or like, oh, I'm going to run out of things to break or resources. There's a ton of stuff, but I do like the permanence of the game because it's tracking everything that you've picked up. And so you can't search things again. You can't break things again. So the game is very active in maintaining everything you've done in the world. And a lot of what you're going to be doing to progress in some instances is killing enemies. There are going to be enemies all over the place, just kind of sitting, hanging out. They might be patrolling. And so sometimes you might need to clear out certain areas to progress. At least very early on in the game, there's an instance where like there's a gate on either side of the area you're in, and you can open it, but not until you clear the enemies that are in that area. So that might be something that you come across a couple times throughout this game, having to clear out enemies in order to open certain things. But like I said, they're mostly scattered about randomly, and you can avoid enemies a lot. So like I said, you can run endlessly and you can run past them. As soon as you get near an enemy, if you're in their line of sight in any way, a little circle meter will pop up above them that's like a yellow question mark. And if it gets all the way filled in, they'll see you and then they'll rush at you. Also, if you're breaking things nearby them, that meter will also start to slowly tick up, as well as if they see you kill another enemy or even hear you kill another enemy. So there is a sound factor in this. There's no meter for it, but pretty soon you get the idea of like, okay, if I start to bang things near this enemy, it'll detect me. And if you get seen by enemies and you just want to run away, you actually can outrun some of them, or at least they'll give up after a certain amount of time. Some of the higher level enemies will definitely run a lot faster. And most of these enemies are just going to be your basic zombie slash splicers. For the most part, the low-level ones are just going to be like splicers. Like I said, it's like they got knives in their hands, so they're just swiping at you. Some will eventually become like throwers that you'll see, or big, heavy guys that do projectiles. Some enemies that do both projectiles and big swings. And then you'll find bosses in certain areas, and they're really just titled enemies. I don't know if it's trying to put them up as like actual NPCs or anything like that. There'll be like a small cutscene when you go to an area that has like one of these enemies. There aren't that many. I think I've only encountered like 4 or 5 at this point, but they'll have like a health bar that comes up. And so they'll definitely have a lot more HP than most of your typical enemies, as well as do a bunch of damage comparatively. But what you'll get used to with killing enemies is there's a very simple rhythm and dance that you're doing, and it goes along with the timing of your swings. So like you'll go up to an enemy, and if they don't see you, like you'll get a nice you know, hold the swing button and get a big hit on them. If they do, you can time it so that as they're right in front of you, by the time they get up to you, your swing can hit them. And then you can back up a little bit and wait for them to swing. Sometimes they'll swing once, sometimes twice in a row. Again, there's not that many variations of enemies and attacks. So you do get that rhythm pretty easily. And this reminds me a lot of like Withering Rooms or even Conscript if you're using the melee weapon of just like run in there, get a swipe, back up, run in there, get a swipe, back up. So you'll definitely get that rhythm and that timing pretty easily. There is like an auto target lock and I don't know how to shift it. I'm sure there's something in the menus, but I just haven't taken the time to look. But basically they will lock on whatever enemy is closest to you and stay there until you kill them. And then it'll swap to another one if there's another one. You'll be fixated on that enemy, and if you swing and they're in front of you, obviously you'll hit them. But if you're facing an enemy and another enemy like goes in front of them, you won't be locked on to the enemy in front of you, but your swing could still hit them. It's not like the most detailed system, but it kind of brings some order. It's really not something that is that consequential or like janky or anything like that. I actually don't think the combat is really like a major thing in this game. It's really the banging things and breaking things, but it's kind of in the same vein because you're just swinging the thing to make the thing either hurt, whether it's an enemy, or make the object have its meter go down. So let's talk about you and your character. So as you do things, you will gain experience and eventually level up. And pretty much everything that you do gains experience for you. So anytime you pick up resources and put it into your bin at a camp, you're going to get XP for each item, how many of each item. Anytime you kill an enemy, anytime you complete a quest. And your level actually dictates a lot. It dictates what is available in terms of quests. So sometimes you can go to a new area and there might be that exclamation point at an area, but it might say like you need to be level 8 or level 15. And so you have to come back later. And the same thing goes with crafting. You're going to be crafting a lot of things. So you will craft different tools, different weapons, different armor, different quick slot items. And you will need to find sort of these quote unquote recipes. But your level is what's going to unlock your ability to make it. So you might find that like I need to craft the lockpick so I can open these basic lockpick doors. But you'll go on the crafting menu and it'll say like you need to be level 10 or level 9 or level 12 or something like that. So again, everything is really tied to leveling up. But as you craft different things, like different tools and different weapons, different quick slot items, you'll open up like slots in the menu for you to put different things on there so that when you cycle through on the D-pad, you have access to more things just on the main screen. And I would say the crafting menu, there's at least like 25, 30, maybe even up to 40 things on the grid. It's not crazy. Like, it's not like sphere grid type stuff from Final Fantasy X, but like, there's a good amount of things in different categories, like tools, weapons, items, like miscellaneous things. So there's a good amount of stuff here to kind of achieve or get to. So you're always kind of looking ahead to like, oh, what could I craft next? Or like, let me go back and just get a bunch of resources, things like that. And once you craft certain things, you're able to upgrade them. This could be like for particular weapons, like you could upgrade the amount of damage that they do. For some of your quick slot items, like your throwables or your heals, the number of charges that you have for them. It could upgrade the effects of certain things, like specific armor or hats that you're wearing, like how much damage they negate, things like that. You'll also be able to upgrade your backpack, and this is going to be a major thing. Because your backpack is where you're putting your resources until you can get to a resource box at a camp. You'll also get recipes for food items. So you'll find that like when you go into certain houses, you can raid their fridges and you'll search them and like different food items will pop out and you'll get recipes for certain things. And so anytime that you have enough resources to craft that certain food item, you can go to any stove. And this can only be done at a stove, but you can go into any stove in a house and you can cook and you can add in whatever resources you have in your resource box to make that certain recipe. And then your character will consume it. Most of these are going to be just upgrades to your max HP once you make them once. But if you have enough resources to make the same recipe again, I think it's just used as like a general healing thing. So if you make any recipe once, you'll get like a permanent upgrade to your health or other things, but it's also useful if you need to heal at some point. So let's talk pacing of the game in general. So we've already been at it a bit, but the name of the game here is really just going to be collect and stash. A lot of what you're doing is knocking things over, breaking things, and then getting the resources, putting them in your backpack. And so the way your backpack works is you have a certain number of spaces for different resources. And again, this can be upgraded. So let's say you have 7 spaces for 7 different resources. Each resource can then fit a certain number, quantity, of that. So for example, like early on, I think you can fit like 6 or 7 resources and then like 4 amount of each. So like if you find that you're breaking a lot of vines or something like that, like you get the leaves, but like you can only fit like 5 of one leaf. But then if you still have an open slot, you can get another amount of leaves up to 5. But if you start to fill another space, then that will leave like you limited for you being able to collect different resources. So it's just a matter of like what you come across and how much of it you get. And if it fills up, you can't pick up anything else, but you can go into any storage box at any camp and just automatically unload. You just press the X button when you get to the resource box, and it'll just unload and it'll have like a little animation, but you can run away and go back and grab the stuff that you left. What's also interesting is resources stay. So like I said, you can only break things one time. They only give you resources one time. You can only farm or forage different things one time. So if you don't have any room, it'll just sit there on the map and you can go back at any time, which is something that's a bit technologically impressive because almost like Fallout, like everything you interact with will stay on the entire map. So you'll find that like you might go back to an older area that you haven't been to in a while since like the beginning of the game. And when you get there, you might see resources that were there that you forgot to pick up. So the game tracks all of that and it's very permanent. So like I said, you're going to be going back to camp. So let's talk about camp. You're going to find a bunch of camps out there and you'll see a little fire pit and then you'll see the resource box. All you have to do is light the campfire and that'll like unlock that camp. And if you sit at the camp, it's kind of like a bonfire. It'll reset your health. It'll reset any charges on your quick slot items, but it'll also reset all of the enemies. And if you happen to die at any point, the last campfire you went to and either lit or I think rested at, that'll be where you get respawned back to. And then wherever you died, there'll be like your body and whatever resources you had there so you can go and collect it. But there's going to be a lot of camps, and it's here where you're going to be able to craft things, upgrade things, equip different armor, and sleep. So a lot of what you're going to be doing is when you find a new camp, just kind of like going in all directions, exploring a little bit, gathering resources, and then running back to the camp. So go collect, stash it at the camp, go back, get whatever you couldn't pick up, go back, stash it at the camp. If you look at the map is like a giant square, but it'll have different section regions. And the map itself will kind of look like a square grid, almost like a Link to the Past or old Zelda map. And it is sectioned, like there are regions that are sectioned off, but not all of them are physically barriered. So you might cross between different regions and it not be a big thing, or there might be a giant fence or something between regions. And there will be some significance to these regions. So you will eventually unlock fast travel. And this is something that you'll have to get materials to craft. These are going to be these towers that are kind of spread out. I think there might be one in every region, but they're not always that close. And this fast travel is not always that helpful or ideal, I think, because you're still going to be on your feet a lot exploring, like out on foot, running from this last camp and then trying to explore. You really only have full fast travel when you openly explore everywhere and unlock all the towers so you can swap between them. But sometimes you might need to get to a location that's not really near a tower. You will unlock some shortcuts. Like there'll be these bridges that like need to be let down from one side. So that could be very like From Software where it's like you have to unlock gates and things like that. You will come across a couple of these, but sometimes getting to where the other side of a bridge is like super roundabout. So it might be a little frustrating the first time you see it, but eventually you will get to places that unlock the shortcuts to certain areas. I don't like how it kind of coincides with, you know, by the time you find some of these bridges, you might make your way to the fast travel location. I don't know if the pacing of that is that great, but again, it's just kind of encouraging you to explore and really get to seeing all that's out there. You can eventually eliminate enemies so that they don't respawn. And this is linked to the different towers that you unlock that allow you to fast travel. You can make it so that like you craft a thing and then all the enemies in that sectioned off region now won't respawn. And so basically, after you do that, you're going around and killing enemies, and then they leave special items, and then they won't come back. So that's really nice. That could be your game to just, like, clear everything out. And that's really kind of where the game shines, or at least has its identity. It is this sandbox. It is open to exploring and trying to clear things out, whether through crafting certain things to make it happen. But the game really paces itself as, like, this slow rise in unlocking synergy, like, oh, you need this to craft, you need to level up, you need to find resources. And then so there is this synergy, and whether it has a means to an end is really up to you, because I definitely put it alongside a game like Stardew Valley, where it's like you're getting more money to unlock different things, to make more money to unlock different things. So you'll definitely feel that here, just very open-ended. All right, let's talk about the vibe of Dismantle. And let's start with the visuals. This is super cartoonish, I will say. It is definitely a lot of Fortnite meets, like, State of Decay. You will certainly see the Fortnite references, or at least the colors or the shades or whatever. The features of the enemies, or even you as a character, are not very unique, not very, you know, stand out-ish. Very minimal in terms of that. Kind of bland. It's interesting because the camera rarely zooms in to view things up close, so I don't think it's really that big of a deal, because you get the sense of, like, the physicality of you and the enemies and the buildings and the environments, and so I don't feel that there's really that much detail necessary. Colors, there's a lot of color in this game, whether it's the environments, whether it's the different characters. So you've got greens and blues and yellows and oranges, so there's a lot of greenery, shrubs and things like that. Water is very blue, almost comically blue. So full spectrum of color. Indicators are important. So when an enemy is about to attack, whether a melee or a projectile, you'll see, like, something glowing or something starting up, them, like, charging up their attack. So there's more than enough tells to sort of back up and get out of the way. The different colors of the enemy shirts is often an indicator of, like, how difficult they are. Some of the tougher enemies are a little taller at times, or they have bigger weapons, or maybe just bigger in general. And then the hazards that you come across. So there'll be, like, poisons. So a lot of enemies do shoot projectiles that'll leave, like, a poison area, so you don't want to step on it. You'll come across, like, crumbling floors, other hazards like that. So the game does some good visual communication with these. It can be tough because a lot of things are colorful. Environments, so you're in sort of, like, a lot of rural towns. I guess this is, like, a big island. A lot of buildings you'll come across, houses that only have one floor, so you don't have to worry about going upstairs. But then you'll see, like, some businesses, like garages or gas stations or junkyards, things that have a lot of cars or trucks hanging around. So not really, like, huge industrial things, just, like, a lot of rural houses or shacks or sheds. And then in between them, a lot of wilderness. So there will be, like, a main road or some roads there sometimes, but a lot of times you're traversing through a lot of trees and wilderness, and again, you'll come up to, like, the water banks. Some areas will have docks for fishing once you craft a fishing rod. So you're constantly, like, moving around and through a lot of different areas. I found that I was moving the camera around constantly just to make sure I had, like, a view on my character and if there were any, like, immediate enemies around. There will definitely be obstructions that sort of hinder your movement, like we talked about, but some of these are natural, some of these are artificial, so there'll be a lot of, like, plateaus or, like, raised land that sort of gates you from going in certain areas. And then artificially, obviously, you'll have fences and gates and things like that. And let's talk about the setting and the theme. So obviously, rural area, this island, no one else is around. It's just you and all these enemies that I guess were humans turned into zombies. So it's a bit lonely. Again, reminds me a lot of, like, Dead Island, where it's just, like, you and you're just trying to get out of there and you're just navigating this landmine of enemies and hazards. a lot of technology use. So the relay towers, so the different towers that you're able to fast travel through or like get signals out. Something interesting with technology, some oddities, at times maybe even like supernatural, I think. There's a lot of phenomena that you come across. And then there are like ancient tombs of like, I guess, some ancient society. I don't know. Half the stuff, I don't really know what's going on, but it's just interesting when you come across it. And obviously, post-apocalyptic dystopia. So all these things are some kind of zombies or splicers. So right in the world of like Last of Us or State of Decay, not really a lot of information on how this came about, how you got here. Doesn't really stress on what happened or what the remedies are. You're just kind of in it. And that's okay, because I think the simplicity is something that's a bit refreshing. And the game also does add a lot of nice touches to things. Like, you can read signs or get some slight context from certain things that you come across. There is like a regular radio broadcast. Anytime you come across a radio in someone's house, like, you can listen, and it's like episodes of a radio show. So you are getting some kind of context. I don't know how old the radio show is, if it's reruns, if it's live. Most of the time, I'm not really paying attention to it. But also the supernatural element. So like the idea of you dying and respawning at a camp, like, your character will comment on it like, huh, how did I get back here? It does have kind of like a laid back, nonchalant approach to this. It's just plopping you in it, doesn't really try to explain anything, and doesn't really feel bad about it. So I like that. It kind of promotes a little self-awareness, like, hey, you're in a game, and at times, like, let's have a little humorous thing here or there, or some chuckles. I will say it is kind of devoid of character and purpose and story, but I don't know. I feel like that's okay. That also goes along with some of the other elements in the game, especially the audio elements. There's really not much for audio. There's no music. There's only one song on the title screen. But everything else is just like animal sounds or nature sounds, or when you hit certain things, like, you'll hear the clang of the fence, or if you're trying to hit like something that's a little tougher or made of wood, you do hear those different sound effects. But honestly, the only voice that I even recall really hearing in the game is the guy on the radio. And so there's not that much for audio, and that's okay, because I feel like it is something where you can feel very immersed in this world of just like walking around, and there's birds chirping, and like, oh, there's a zombie over there and he's hurling some kind of poison thing at me. So that minimalist approach really does leave you kind of in the area and feeling like you are there. All right, let's wrap up the conversation about Dismantle. So this is a solid pick-up and play game. I feel like you can pick this up at any time. It's very much a combination of State of Decay, Fallout, a little bit of Stardew Valley. I would say most of it is a State of Decay, and you can put it down for a while, and you don't need context to remind you what's going on. I really feel like you could take a day or two off, or even a week, or even a month, and just jump back into this if you want to get into some dystopia and crafting and resource accrual and things like that. You can look at some of your quests, go to certain areas on the map, unlock things, level up. I think the idea of the game is very simple. It's minimal in terms of tutorial and direction, and I don't even think it's needed. It just plops you in, and it's like, here, this to swing, and sometimes you can hit these things, and here's your backpack, and then it's like, okay, go. I like the pacing of the synergy to keep you engaged in all aspects of the game, so like the crafting, the upgrading, the exploring, the fighting, the leveling up, it's all really intertwined. Sometimes you might feel a little gated. Sometimes the fast travel kind of sucks, or it's very limited, and that can frustrate you. It definitely frustrated me at times, because you definitely have to be on foot for some long travel at times. But I think that's part of it. Like, you want to explore, you want to find things in different areas and just accrue resources. In terms of value, I think $20 is fine for this game. It's fine. For me, to pay $20 for this game, there's not enough of a lot of things. There's not enough character, not necessarily characters, but just character in the game, or like some kind of story or pull to really have me appreciate it. Eventually, I feel like I will put this game down and just be like, eh, it's fine, I'm done with it. And that's fine. Paying under $10, I think, is ideal for this game. I don't think I would pay more than $10 knowing what it is, but I still feel like it is something enjoyable. I can definitely see people who would want this sort of mindless, endless sandbox to just explore, bang things. So I definitely feel like this will satisfy for hours a lot of people, especially the crafting depth. And so I do recommend this game. All right, that's going to wrap up this episode. Stay tuned for our next episode to see what new game we found for you.